I'm Andrea Loyan, Vermont Edition producer, and I just wanted to let you know that the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening, and enjoy!
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela LaFrac. Today on the show, we are diving into the Farm Bill. It's a massive piece of federal legislation that impacts the livelihoods of farmers all across the country. It also covers food access programs for low-income families. Now, the Farm Bill needs to be renewed by Congress every 5 years, but the current version expired at the end of September. So what does that mean for Vermont farmers and people who rely on food access programs like SNAP? Later in the show, we'll hear from the policy director of NOFA, the Northeast Organic Farming Association of Vermont, as well as the head of Hunger Free Vermont. She'll tell us how SNAP and other benefits could change if the bill doesn't get reauthorized soon. But first, let's check in with Abby Course with Course Farm Dairy. It's a 150-year-old dairy in Whitingham in Windham County. Their business is a member of NOFA, and Abby's a board member there as well. Welcome back to the show, Abby.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you for your time. And listeners, you can join the conversation this hour as well. We know the Farm Bill is complicated, and we are hoping to dive into many different aspects. So if you're a farmer in Vermont or you receive funding from one of the programs that it covers, give us a call. Our number is 800-639-2211. You can also email us at vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. So Abby, let's start with a little more history about your farm. When was it founded, and how have you seen it change over the years?
Yes, hi. So our farm is now a small organic dairy in Whitingham. It was founded in 1868.
That's pretty incredible.
Thank you. And I think it's seen many iterations, although we have been through a series of sort of luck, privilege, and good fortune, been able to keep it more or less in the same or similar vein as it always has been. We've always been a grazing dairy. We never went to full-time confinement for our animals. And one of the things, you know, our little claim to fame or whatever, is that we've been rotationally grazing our animals since the 1960s. Mm. Rotational grazing is, you know, adaptive multi-paddock grazing, which we do is when you move the animals across the landscape, giving them fresh feed based on what you're seeing, you know, the feedback loop between the animals and the land as you're moving them across the land to ensure that the animals are getting the nutrition that they need to produce the highest quality milk that they can, and that the land is not being degraded in the process, so mm-hmm. the animals don't stay there too long. They're not, you know, impacting the soil by being there too long.
Mm-hmm. So we've covered on Vermont Edition and at Vermont Public many of the challenges facing the dairy industry in the state, particularly small dairies. And hearing you describe your business, I just wonder what's the secret sauce been to keeping it profitable?
Oh, boy. Like I said, I think I want to be very transparent that, you know, there is a lot of, I have been lucky. My ancestors and family members have been good financial stewards of this business. But the, you know, the reality is at this point, to be a sixth generation farmer means, and somehow my family has managed to not take on a large amount of debt. And I think that one of the things that needs to become better understood about the position in which most dairy farmers are is that it is such an immensely capital-intensive business structure, and you are almost guaranteed to have to take on debt in order to keep your infrastructure where it needs to be. And that is an enormous component of how so many farms in Vermont find themselves in the position that they're in, not the least of which is, you know, the blame can be solidly placed, in my opinion, at the foot of the Farm Bill and the structure by which we have determined we want to have our farms in this country producing food.
Mm. Well, let's talk here for a moment about the farm bill. And I'm so glad that we have you on, Abby, as somebody who is working day in and day out at a dairy in Vermont. Because I think, you know, sometimes when I read these articles on the New York Times or The Hill about the farm bill, it's really hard to connect what some of these programs are with their, you know, big multi-word names and their massive budgets to what's going on the ground in Vermont. So for you, as a dairy farmer in Vermont, how does the farm bill affect you and your business?
Well, I think the thing that I want to help people understand today, you know, that's my priority, I guess, is that the way that the farm bill is structured, my farm essentially isn't supposed to exist. None of the farms, none of the dairies are in Vermont should really exist at this point, right? Because the model that the farm bill pushes and has since Earl Butz was the Secretary of Agriculture and began the Get Bigger, Get Out is this model of, you know, we have doubled down on a cheap food policy in this country, and that is what we subsidize for. Additionally, you know, the farm bill keeps us in the loop of being reliant on these monocropping kind of industrial agricultural models that rely on a lot of chemical inputs. And so for an organic dairy, when those tools are literally not something that you're permitted to use because of the certification requirements that you go through, you're, you know, literally operating a farm in the exact opposite model that our federal policy has determined is the way that you should operate a farm. And we haven't done a good job, I think, even of understanding the ramifications to all of the farms in Vermont by that simple fact alone.
Hmm. Well, hearing you describe that disconnect, I think of the fact that, you know, our former Senator Patrick Leahy served on the Agriculture Committee in the Senate for years and years, was eventually the chair of that committee and shepherded many farm bills. Mm-hmm. We also have now Senator Peter Welch, who's on the Agriculture Committee, and I believe he's even visited your farm within this year. And I wonder if you feel, you know, that you have advocates in our congressional delegation, or if there is still this broader disconnect between what you're saying that you and other small farmers need and what the farm bill and what members of Congress are pushing.
I personally feel very strongly that we have had amazing and incredible advocates in all of our congressional delegation. I wouldn't hesitate on that for a minute. I think, again, the issue is, you know, Vermont is a tiny place, and mm-hmm. for the size of our population and the size of our literal land mass, we have been so fortunate to have these, you know, outsized influential advocates in our congressional delegation that have pushed to keep the farms in Vermont assisted in as many ways as they possibly can. But I think that, you know, the sad reality is that the amount of lobbying that goes into, you know, the amount of money that is poured into lobbying for the farm bill by multinational corporations, and this is all tied into the fossil fuel economy as well, right? Those chemical inputs are byproducts of the fossil fuel economy. And so, you know, our congressional delegation is up against the same types of forces that we're all up against. You know, we're all kind of doing the David against Goliath fight. And I think that they have been valiantly fighting for a long time and doing whatever they can. And, you know, there's just a reality there that sometimes, you know, it is what it is.
Abby, I'm curious if you see your farm's priorities as being notably different from those of the state's conventional dairy farmers? Or is the fact that, you know, everyone's here in Vermont, they're all relatively small compared to, you know, what's going on at farms in the Midwest, does that kind of make everyone feel like they're on the same team?
I long for that world. I don't think we're quite there yet. And I think that there are still a lot of important conversations that need to be had around a lot of the nuances between the different models, but I think all of the models at the moment still serve a purpose, and you know, there's a reason that they currently exist. And I guess what I would say is, yes, all of the farmers that I know in Vermont are all doing the very best that they know how to do within the framework that they have and the tools that they have to do right by their land and their animals and their people. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, right, there are bad actors involved in anything. We can find them anywhere. But I think we are at a moment where coalition work is very necessary, and that it's not so much about, you know, what are the differences, but what are the similarities? What are the things we all agree on? You know, Vermont is actually pretty far ahead in terms of its, you know, even in its conventional dairy industry with its regenerative practices and soil health principles because of the work that the state has done, you know, around water quality specifically. And so there is a lot of work being done in this state that is not being replicated or is only just beginning in many other states across the country. And I also think that that is not something that is as widely understood as it could be when we're trying to think about or think through the complexity of what that means for our farms. Mm. Here, you know, we still import about 70% of our food into Vermont, and so what we're not producing here is being produced elsewhere, and I can pretty much guarantee that many of the conditions under which that is happening are immensely degradational to environments and people and animals in other places. We just don't see it.
Mm. So, Abby, do you think that there are ways in which the Farm Bill, in its next iteration, could better incentivize those types of changes to the industry?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. Yes. So the Farm Bill is, you know, around $856 billion over 10 years, right? And I sit on the Farmer Leadership Council for Kiss the Ground's Regenerate America campaign. So it's a bipartisan coalition, and we're advocating for much more regenerative funding in the Farm Bill. So it currently stands that only 1% of the Farm Bill's funding goes towards any type of regenerative agricultural practices. And I think that that's something, again, that is not very well understood when the public is trying to understand how the farmers came to be where they are. This is a policy issue. If we changed what the incentive structure was within the Farm Bill, I think the farmers would follow immediately. But they're stuck in this system that has been created by the way that the Farm Bill rewards or doesn't reward practices. So essentially, when you're trying to, or needing, if you're certified organic, to utilize certain practices, certain methods, certain types of inputs, our country doesn't invest in that infrastructure. We don't produce organic grain. We don't produce or focus on, you know, these other ways of putting fertilizer inputs, you know, that are natural sources that build soil and create better resilience in the soil. And so until that paradigm shifts, a lot of farms are caught, right? They're wanting to do the best that they can, but they're stuck in a model that is literally set up to, you know, keep this system going. Mm. And so my hope is that at the very least we can get some additional funding for peer-to-peer, you know, farmer-to-farmer supports and a lot more education about the importance of soil health and organic matter and the ways in which, particularly as we face these increasing extreme weather events, that all of those things are going to help us build a far more resilient agricultural and food economy in Vermont for our farmers and for our citizens. You know, we're all going to benefit from any of that work that can be done, and so much of it is already being done, and the farmers are not actually ever being compensated for that work, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of that work, most of that work that we've done here we've done because it was philosophically important to us. But it's not, you know, paid for in the price that we're paid for the milk that we produce.
Right. Abby, before we let you go, we hear a lot of talk about how difficult farming is these days. You had mentioned in your last comments the word hope. So let's end there with, I'm curious, Abby, you've been doing this work for so long. Is there a moment that comes to mind from your work, from being with the animals or with your colleagues on the farm recently that has really like brought you joy?
Well, so we had a dairy grazing apprentice here, and he graduated from the program, and he is now back on our farm working, and he has a six-month-old daughter. And I think, right, it's cliche, but when the calves are born, seeing her around the farm, seeing my kids around the farm, looking around and seeing that even though it has been a fight and a struggle, and I know that we're going against the stream of how we're supposed to be, quote unquote, doing things, you know, by policy, not by morality. Mm-hmm. I can see around me every day the power of working with nature, and that is the hope. I think it's difficult to find some days, but that's what I come back to, is what you can see is possible when you start to become a part of the systems and become a human that's engaging with them in a way that is trying to enhance them and ensure that they can be resilient as opposed to working against them.
Mm. Calves and babies. We needed that. Not to oversimplify it, but that's a great great spot to wrap this up. Abby Course with Course Farm Dairy in Whitingham, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Today on the show, we're discussing the Farm Bill, the omnibus package that needs to get reauthorized every 5 years. Both Republicans and Democrats consider the bill critical legislation. That's because it has major impacts on the agriculture industry and low-income families who rely on federal assistance programs for food. Our next guests represent each of those sectors. Maddie Kempner is the policy director at NOFA, the Northeast Organic Farming Association of Vermont. Maddie, welcome.
Thanks, Michaela.
We're also joined by Anora Horton, the executive director of Hunger Free Vermont. It's a statewide nonprofit that advocates for Vermonters who experience hunger and malnutrition. Anora, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Maddie, to start, can you talk us through the current status of the Farm Bill? It didn't meet a key deadline this fall. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely correct. So the current Farm Bill, the 2018 Farm Bill, officially expired as of October 1st. And the implications of that, you know, at this moment, there are certain programs that are at risk of lacking, you know, authority or funding to continue. I would say the vast majority of the implications of the expired Farm Bill start to kick in on January 1st, 2024, if Congress doesn't act or pass an extension of the current Farm Bill.
Okay. And this situation that we find ourselves in, it isn't completely unprecedented, right? Like the Farm Bill is often delayed.
Absolutely. Yes. The Farm Bill has been delayed many times in the past. You know, at the moment, there have been sort of rolling expirations of government funding deadlines that have really come before Farm Bill in terms of, you know, level of priority. So right now we're up against another government shutdown, you know, possibly as soon as November 17th, if the government doesn't pass some appropriations bills to keep funding going. And yes, absolutely, over the, you know, the life of the Farm Bill over the past years, there have been many times when it has not passed before its expiration date.
Mm. Deja vu all over again. Well, one of the holdups is a debate over SNAP benefits, the Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program. Anora, can you talk us through what conversations are like that you're hearing about around SNAP?
Sure. And just for everybody who's listening here in the state of Vermont, SNAP has lots of different names,
yes,
depending on where you live in the country. So here in Vermont, we call it Three Squares Vermont. And, you know, this is a really important program. 68,000 of us here in Vermont rely on Three Squares Vermont, or SNAP at the federal level. And so, you know, we all really need to care about what the debate is around funding for SNAP at the federal level. So there is always a debate about funding SNAP every time the Farm Bill comes up for reauthorization. And, you know, those of us and NOFA and Hunger Free Vermont are two members of a coalition here in Vermont, the Farm Bill Nutrition Coalition, that puts together priorities for the Farm Bill every time it's up for reauthorization. And our priority number one is always to protect and defend the current benefit levels in SNAP. But what really needs to happen is some common sense improvements to SNAP. So, yes, on the one hand, there's a debate among some in Congress about cutting SNAP benefits. But there's also a big debate with a lot of support in Congress around making some critical common sense improvements to the program. And that's where Vermont's congressional delegation is really standing strong and committed to making improvements to SNAP that we really need.
Well, I spoke just a couple weeks ago to Democratic Senator Peter Welch about the Farm Bill. He serves on the Senate's Agriculture Committee and chairs its Rural Development and Energy Subcommittee. And when he came on Vermont Edition, he addressed the possibility of some of these cuts. So let's take a listen.
They're talking about cutting certain programs, and what the turmoil that's occurring in the House is really affecting the Farm Bill. In the Senate. In the Senate, we've got the Republican and Democrat as leaders of the committee who work together pretty well. But the budget cutting, which is targeting food nutrition programs, is a threat to resolution. So there's some talk now about extending the current bill for a year while we try to work out some of these things, particularly in view of what's going on in the House.
And when Senator Welch said what's going on in the House, he was referring to the 3 weeks in which the House did not have a speaker. They now do, Mike Johnson. Maddie, when you were watching all of the debates over, you know, the federal budget and what was going on with the House speaker, what were you thinking about in terms of the Farm Bill and how it could be affected?
Yeah, so there are, you know, really serious implications, absolutely, if the federal government fails to act to extend or, you know, authorize a new farm bill. Currently, one of the programs that is actively at risk without an extension of the farm bill, if Congress fails to act before the end of the year, is a really important one for a lot of our certified organic producers here in Vermont. There's a program called the Organic Certification Cost Share Program that basically reimburses certified organic producers for a significant percentage of the fee that they pay to be certified. That's an example of a program that is at risk of being stranded if Congress fails to act. So, where my thoughts go when there is that kind of turmoil in Congress is really the question of, does this Congress have the ability and the willingness to get done what we need to do in order to keep people fed who rely on SNAP benefits, for example, and to keep these programs that really are foundational supports to our producers here in Vermont operating going forward.
What is the fee for becoming certified? How big is that?
It varies depending on your income as a producer. So it is, you know, ideally at least it's scaled to your production. So, and what that means is because that certification cost share payment, it's capped at $750 per scope is how we say it. And so for smaller producers, medium scale producers, a lot of those we have here in Vermont, the program matters a lot more. If you're a massive, say, commodity producer who is certified organic in places like the Midwest where they have much larger farms, that $750 doesn't go nearly as far. So that program is particularly important for the scale of farms that we have here in Vermont who are certified organic.
Anor, with Hunger Free Vermont, the federal government increased funding for food access programs during the pandemic, but most of that money isn't there anymore, and these programs are kind of scaling back. Could you tell us a little bit about the shift in funding and coverage that happened in the last couple of years, and is there a hope that the Farm Bill or another funding mechanism could help regrow some of these programs?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that is, you know, we are really experiencing the consequences of Congress's decision to end these critical pandemic era income supports of various kinds for people. And some of those were directly in the SNAP program. So during the pandemic, Congress temporarily raised benefit levels. And that made a huge, huge difference for people. And now those benefit levels have gone back to their levels that were set in the 2018 Farm Bill, right? And they are completely inadequate, especially when coupled with the incredible inflation and the cost of food and everything else that we've been experiencing. And so that's left 2 in 5 people in Vermont. That's 40% of people in Vermont reporting hunger or food insecurity in 2022. And that is a match for USDA data just released nationally that shows a 40% increase in food insecurity across this country in 2022 as compared to 2021. So that shows the dramatic effect of these cuts. And that is why we need Congress to do its job in reauthorizing these programs, because the Farm Bill is the best pathway we have right now to addressing benefit adequacy issues and also to making some other simple fixes that would really make a huge difference for people when it comes to how they're able to use their SNAP benefits. Mm.
And when we talk about the Vermonters who currently still do receive those benefits, what could change on the horizon, particularly with this looming, yet again, government shutdown in late November?
Right. Well, it all depends on how long it takes for Congress to resolve its issues, shall we say, because the way that federal funding works for these different programs is that there's kind of a lag time before we'll have consequences to these critical nutrition programs. So certainly what we hope happens, what we're calling on Congress to do, is to actually pass a continuing resolution and keep these programs funded for a longer period of time. But if that doesn't happen and there is a federal government shutdown on November 17th, Three Scores Vermont SNAP is funded until January. Also, that is the same thing for all of the child nutrition programs. So school breakfast and lunch, child care meals, all of those funded until January. Also, the emergency food programs that operate through the Vermont Food Bank and our food shelves and food pantries, those have funding through January. So what it's important for listeners to know is that right now, Three Scores Vermont is operating in the normal way, and mm-hmm. it will continue to do that until January, no matter what happens with the government right now. And so you should use your benefits. You should, you know, school meals are operating and in a universal way here in Vermont, as we know. And, you know, those programs are available. You should use them if you need help affording enough food for you and your family, you should apply for these benefits. So they're all there. They're all operating normally. And I know our congressional delegation is committed to doing everything they can to make sure that continues uninterrupted.
Well, I'm sure those are comforting words for many to hear. Thank you. Let's go to the phones. We have a call from Graham coming in. Graham, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, everybody. My name is Graham Eunice Drufenach. I'm the Policy Director at Rural Vermont. I just want to say thank you to everybody first, Maddie, Anor, Michaela, Abby, I think in solidarity with everything that's been discussed so far. I just wanted to talk quickly today about some work we're doing on the Farm Bill. We've been working with the National Family Farm Coalition, the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund, Farm and Ranch Freedom Alliance, and others to clarify the personal use exemption in the Federal Meat Inspection Act. And this would protect Vermont's laws and other states' laws related to what we talk about is the on-farm slaughter of livestock. So currently there's a personal use exemption in the Federal Meat Inspection Act, which allows for a person raising an animal to slaughter that animal in an uninspected facility for personal consumption, employees, family members, and non-paying guests. And what this looks like on the ground in Vermont is that a farmer sells an animal while it's alive to one or more people, an itinerant slaughterer is hired to come to the farm to perform the slaughter, and the carcass is then brought to a custom processor for butchering. It's then distributed back to the owners of the animal. And there are state laws we've worked on for years which provide parameters around this related to the number of animals, food safety, et cetera. Currently, this is legal because of standing guidance from 2018, which bases the personal use exemption on ownership. But guidance can be changed at any moment depending on the administration, which leaves farmers, itinerant slaughterers, custom processors, and the eaters who rely on this meat extremely vulnerable. And we've effectively been put on notice that this standing guidance is vulnerable. So our goal right now is to clarify this outdated language to allow livestock owners to slaughter animals themselves, as opposed to people who raise the animals, or to have an agent slaughter the livestock on the farm where it was raised. As Abby said, we're a small state. We need to work in coalition to achieve the changes we need. We have more than 600 signatures from more than 38 states, dozens of farming organizations, Agency of Agriculture supporting this work, which really exemplifies the diversity of support for this legislative change and the recognition of the critical importance to Vermont. So I appreciate sharing this with you. I'm happy to answer questions and respond to more.
Well, thank you, Graham. That was Graham with Rural Vermont discussing the goal to affirm state laws like Vermont's that allow for on-farm slaughter without a federal meat inspection. Thanks for calling in and telling us about it, Graham. Maddie, I'm curious. You mentioned some of the coalitions that NOFA is a part of and working with other organizations across the state advocating for farmers and people involved in all different aspects of the food system. Graham is calling in from one of those, rural Vermont. I'm not sure if you all work together,
but could you
tell me a little bit about how those partnerships work and you know how you are working to affect change with Vermont's congressional delegation?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much. And thanks, Graham, for the call. We certainly support rural Vermont's leadership in the area of on-farm slaughter. That's an example of an issue where, some local control over agricultural practices is really critical. And food sovereignty for people on the ground is really important and why we need to invest in local and regional food systems. As Abby mentioned earlier, the coalition aspect of working on the farm bill is really important, particularly for small states like Vermont. One example that's been really successful in terms of coalition work that we've been a part of recently is really building on the work that we've done at the state level to support organic dairy farmers who are in crisis. I know Vermont Public has reported on that situation and the work that we were advocating for in the legislature this past year. At the federal level, we've been working nationally over the past 9 months or so with the coalition of organic dairy producers and producer associations on provisions that would really put a safety net under organic dairy producers so that they don't face the kind of economic freefall situation that they've been in over the last year. And that has resulted in Senator Welch just last week introducing a bill called the O-Dairy Act that will put specific supports in place for organic dairy producers to make sure that they are better supported in the farm bill in the future. In addition, we work with organizations like the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition, which is a 150-member coalition that has member groups working in sustainable ag from all around the country, similar to NOFA. And collectively, that group really has grown to have a powerful impact on the kinds of policies that are moved forward in each farm bill. And right now, our primary goal as a coalition, is to move forward the Agriculture Resilience Act, which will really make substantial and meaningful investments in climate resilient agriculture and try to shift. The majority of the farm bill funding right now goes to support, by and large, wealthy, massive farms that are not very diversified and that are frankly very risky. We have a lot of policies that subsidize that kind of farming in this country right now. And what we need to do and what the ARA, the Agriculture Resilience Act, will do is shift some of the investments to the kinds of farming that we have in Vermont that really keep our rural communities thriving and that keep people fed. So that's some of the work that we've been involved in.
Let's go to some of our emails in our inbox. Joanna writes, just a note to say, I so appreciate Abby Corse and her wonderful voice for dairy farmers in Vermont. I too am a dairy farmer, conventional, but also smaller in size. And I am first generation, not sixth like Abby is. I also work with several other dairies across the state. I'd like to add that while it can be frustrating to see slow change on the farm bill, there has been progress in finding effective risk management programs, increasing funding for conservation and other environmental-related incentives, and, of course, nutrition programs. Thank you so much for writing in, Joanna. We also got a question from a listener named Fran in Weybridge, who asks, is there anything in the proposed farm bill that will help protect our native pollinators from pesticides? This is a serious problem all over the country, including in Vermont, not only for pollinators, but for birds, fish, and other wildlife. Maddie, do you know of any programs in the Farm Bill that address this?
Yeah, I will say the primary thing that I think is really critical to pay attention to in the Farm Bill, which we know from past Farm Bill experience, is that we need to play defense against efforts essentially to overrule states' rights in terms of pesticide regulations. There is a bill, for example, right now in this Farm Bill that's it's called a marker bill. It's been proposed. It's called the EATS Act that would essentially, you know, override a lot of state regulatory authority over pesticide use. And so we are actively working in solidarity with other folks around the country to oppose the EATS Act being included in the Farm Bill so that we can make sure that states maintain at least the level of authority that we do currently have to regulate pesticides.
Well, let's return for a moment to the nutritional benefits programs. Anor, you've been advocating for a change to the SNAP benefits program, also known as Three Squares here in Vermont, to allow people to buy hot foods like, say, a rotisserie chicken at the grocery store. Why do you feel that that change is important? And is there any progress towards that goal?
Right. So the scenario is this. You can walk into a grocery store with your EBT card and you can go to the freezer section and get a frozen chicken, or you can go to the, you know, meat counter and get chicken, pieces of chicken, right? Fresh chicken. And you can buy either of those with your EBT card if you're a Three Squares Vermont benefits recipient, but you can't go to the deli and get a cooked rotisserie chicken with your EBT card. And that is a prohibition longstanding in the Farm Bill rules. And the only way to fix that is for Congress to make that change. And there is actually bipartisan support, both Republicans and Democrats, who support eliminating the three words that would have to get crossed out in the Farm Bill in order to get rid of that prohibition on hot foods at grocery stores. And until Congress takes up the Farm Bill, we can't make that common sense change. And it's so important because, like, just the recent flooding this past summer here in Vermont, so many people displaced from their homes. We have the second highest rate of people who are houseless in Vermont right now. Many of those people are living in hotels or they are camping, and they need to be able to buy hot prepared food. They don't have a way to cook. So that is just one of the common sense changes that could easily be made if we could ever just get the Farm Bill reauthorization process underway.
That's interesting. And what you were just describing there kind of hits at my follow-up question, which is what do you say to people who might point out how much more expensive prepared foods are than, you know, the ingredients used to make them, and might believe that this program change isn't an efficient use of taxpayer dollars?
Well, at Hunger Free Vermont, we believe that every person knows what they need. They know what's best for them and their nutritional needs. And it's easy for those of us who have working kitchens to say that you should cook and prepare your meals from scratch. But that is actually not possible for thousands and thousands of people in our state right now. And so, you know, we think that everybody has the right to self-determination when it comes to what they need and how to prepare their own food.
And I believe Senator Welch has been working on a bill, the Hot Foods Act, to push these changes forward.
Yes. So Senator Welch has signed on to that bill, the Senate version, and Congresswoman Ballant has signed on to the House version. So, yes, our congressional delegation is really strongly supportive of some of these key changes that that need to be made.
Mm. And Maddie Kempner with NOFA, Senator Welch, since we're speaking of him, when he and I spoke a couple weeks ago, he said that there is one part of the farm bill that has been particularly exciting to him, which is programs to incentivize farmers towards regenerative agricultural practices that can reduce carbon emissions. Some of that work is already being done in Vermont, and he says that he sees the state as potentially being a leader in that area. Could you tell us more about some of these programs, what that vision is?
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to. And I have to say, I think the farm bill can feel really complicated and really opaque. And I think what's important to remember is that particularly agricultural solutions to climate change, for the most part, they're not mysterious. They're not technologically advanced or particularly expensive. What we're talking about and the kinds of things that will be incentivized in the Agricultural Resilience Act, which the senator has co-sponsored, are things like rotating crops so that farmers can be less reliant on pesticides and fungicides and herbicides. It's investing in people's ability to become certified organic if they choose to. We're talking about grazing livestock, which many Vermont farmers already do. We're talking about planting trees along streams and rivers so that we can increase habitat for wildlife and be more resilient in the face of flooding. So these are the kinds of practices that the ARA will help support and that we know, you know, farmers already know. As Inora said, you know, with regard to people using SNAP benefits, farmers know best what their land needs to thrive. Right now, the farm bill is disproportionately supporting the few largest and wealthiest farms at the expense of the many smaller scale farms that actually feed our communities. And those farms really need our support to move in this direction.
Mm. So programs that rely on ideas or technology that are relatively straightforward to explain, but do cost some real money, especially for farmers who are operating on slim margins. And you're saying the federal government needs to come in and incentivize that work to get done. Otherwise, farmers can't be expected to pay for it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the resources are there. What's happening right now is that the resources in the farm bill on the agriculture side are disproportionately going to support things like crop insurance that work really well for large, non-diversified farms who are, you know, not rotating their crops, who are planting corn or soy year after year. Those farmers are incentivized to keep doing what they're doing. And when those farms can access things like crop insurance and commodity price support payments, they are, you know, further bolstered by their ability to go to a bank and say, if I continue producing this crop in this way, I'm guaranteed a payment essentially from the federal government through crop insurance or commodity payments. And so the bank is incentivized then to lend that farm money to allow them to buy more land and get bigger. Mm. So by shifting a lot of those resources that are currently propping up these larger scale industrialized farms to the practices like we're trying to see in the Agricultural Resilience Act, we will actually support the ability for our smaller farms to feed us in our communities.
Hmm. And briefly, because we do need to wrap up quickly or soon here, I did get an email ahead of today's show from Stephen with Cedar Mountain Farm and Cobb Hill Cheese in Heartland, who wanted to share his own input on the farm bill. And he wrote in about providing a base income to land managers and farmers. Could you tell us about this idea, Maddie, of a base annual payment idea? Do you think that's a possibility or a good
absolutely.
Use of funds?
Yeah, and I appreciate that that comment from Stephen. We are really excited about this idea at NOFA Vermont and have been actually in conversation with some partners here at the state level to start piloting this idea in Vermont. Essentially, the thought process is particularly for people like farmers who are providing an essential service, you know, growing food that literally we all need to survive, by providing those people with a baseline income that will allow them to do things like hire childcare or pay for health care, we might actually be able to, you know, support the ability for our whole agricultural system here in Vermont to function and for our rural communities to thrive. Right now, what we hear from farmers so frequently is that because they're living on such slim margins, young farmers, for example, really struggle to be able to pay for adequate childcare, to be able to focus on the growth of their farm business. If they had this baseline income to allow them to cover their childcare expenses or their healthcare expenses, they would be able to focus on growing out their businesses that would support support other businesses in their local economies and support, you know, families and their communities to be fed.
Hmm. Well, we'll have to keep an eye on that. It's something I haven't learned too much about just yet. Anora, for people who are listening who rely on federal assistance to be able to buy food and are concerned about the headlines that they're reading, are concerned by the constant threat of a government shutdown, what words of advice or comfort do you have for those folks who might be listening now?
Well, I will say nothing is changing right now. And there are so many of us around the country who are calling on Congress to do their job and take action and make sure that, you know, they are taking care of all of us who rely on federal programs, which we all do, between the agriculture ones and the nutrition titles in the Farm Bill. Every single person in this country depends on the Farm Bill. So use these programs, apply for them. You know, only about half of those of us here in Vermont who are eligible for Three Squares Vermont are using Three Squares Vermont. Hmm. And I think that's another point, is that Three Squares Vermont brings in $10 million a month to our food system to support food retailers, to support farmers through people using the program and using our EBT cards. And so the more different ways we have to use those benefits in a way that works for us, the more it will be worth it for more of us to apply to Three Squares Vermont. So apply, use your benefits, and let Congress know that we need them to act.
Mm, and buy those fruits and veggies.
Absolutely.
Anora Horton with Hunger Free Vermont and Maddie Kempner with NOFA. Thank you both so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having us, Michaela.
Thanks so much.